Hello, my name is Gary Strait, and this is Straight from the Road. People are all the time asking me if I'm related to George Strait, and the answer is no. I don't look like him, act like him, walk like him, or talk like him, and I darn sure can't sing like him. But I have written a few country tunes, and that's what part of this story is about. That and a tale about a rock and rollin' road trip from Key West, Florida to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, and a 1953 Peterbilt motorhome. After 4 days of the testosterone festival at Sturgis, I decided to motor west on Highway 212 into Montana. Although I'm fascinated with the harsh environments of the West, I can't say that I enjoyed the drive across eastern Montana. Heat waves undulated on the horizon, distorting the view of the barren landscape and creating the illusion of movement and life where there were none. The bleak surroundings and sweltering heat drained the life force out of me as well as my spirit drifted across the high prairie. Highway 212 intersects with Interstate 90 at the site of Little Bighorn Battlefield. I parked Zelda and set out on foot across the treeless hillside at high noon and almost suffocated on the thin, dry, dusty air as I trudged across the forsaken landscape. Suddenly, a gust of wind swept across the prairie, sending a ghostly wave through the buffalo grass. The spirited breeze sent a chill up my spine, however, it offered no relief from the heat. A Native American park ranger was given a thought-provoking account of the battle between General Custer and Crazy Horse. He emphasized the inevitable clash of cultures between the white settlers and the Native Americans, but he also noted that the Indians had warred among themselves for centuries until they were forced to unite against the newcomers. After the lecture, a woman in her 60s pushed me aside and patted the ranger on his arm and spoke in a European accent. "I want you to know that I think it's appalling what these barbaric Yanks did to your people." "As I said, this was a clash of culture," the ranger replied. "This sort of event has happened around the world and all throughout history." She squeezed his arm in a motherly fashion, then spoke in a confidential tone. "All the same, these bloody Americans are such brutes." I couldn't hold my tongue. "I guess it slipped your mind that the British invented scalping," I said. "That's true," the ranger agreed. "The British trading companies wanted to ensure safe passage for the fur traders. Therefore, they encouraged the slaughtering of Indians." This was clearly not what the woman wanted to hear. She had looked to the park ranger for support, but he offered none. Instead, he very politely added, "Keep in mind that most of those soldiers were first-generation Americans. Their ancestors had fled the atrocities in Europe. I cannot defend the action of those soldiers. However, I cannot attack them either." The lady glared at the park ranger with a look of betrayal, then stormed away. The ranger and I stood there staring at each other until I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that." "That's all right," he said. "This is a very sad place. Brings out a lot of emotion in people. But unfortunately, sometimes they are too quick to point their finger across the fence without even looking at the ghost living in their own backyard. I drove to a truck stop in Billings to get a much-needed shower. That's where I heard about the Tim McGraw concert at the Montana State Fair. I couldn't afford a ticket, but I decided to go over to the fairgrounds anyway. I was peeking in one of the arena doors when an usher stepped up behind me and said, "Do you have a ticket?" "No," I grimaced and patted my wallet. She glanced around, then said, "Go on in. It's almost over anyway." Tim was singing a ballad called "Don't Take the Girl," which told a story about a young boy who was fearful of spending time with a little girl. But as the boy matured into a young man, he was even more fearful of losing her. Tim's last number was a calypso song called "Refried Dreams," which described a broken-hearted cowboy who crossed the border into Mexico to escape from his shattered dreams. He left the stage, then returned for an encore and sang about some country boys and girls who were getting down on the farm. That little ditty helped make Tim McGraw a household name. A row of cowboys in front of me bobbed their Stetsons back and forth to the rhythm of the music, while their girlfriends danced and sang at the top of their lungs. I watched as the crowd worked itself into a frenzy and wondered how many experts in Nashville had told Mr. McGraw that his little ditties would never sell. After the echo of the chorus faded to silence and the stage lights went to black, the superstar vanished into the darkness. The arena lights came on and I worked my way down to the stage. I've always been fascinated with stage production, so I wanted to get a closer look as the roadies broke down the equipment and loaded the trucks. Besides that, I had a couple of demo tapes in my pocket, and I thought I might get a chance to pass them along. A stage manager was directing the loading operation over a two-way radio. After he finished giving orders, he stepped toward me and said, "What's the matter? Didn't you get to kick enough ass last week?" "Excuse me," I said. I don't know what you're talking about. He pointed at my T-shirt, which had Sturgis printed across the chest. Sturgis, weren't you at the concert in Sturgis? He said. I didn't even know there was a concert in Sturgis. He relaxed a little, then said, there was supposed to be, but the wind and rain knocked out the power. The crowd went berserk and started throwing rocks and bottles. We had to take a couple of stagehands to the hospital. Now we're short-handed. We talked for a few minutes about Sturgis, road trips, and stage crews, in between interruptions by his two-way radio. He rattled off more instructions, then turned to me and said, you're a pretty big dude. You want a job? Before I answered, he was interrupted again. That's when I heard a sultry voice behind me. So, are you guys with the band? I turned around to see two very attractive young ladies. One girl was wearing a black leather miniskirt, which was so tight she looked as though she had been shrink-wrapped in black plastic. The other girl was more modestly dressed in a sleeveless western shirt and Wranglers. The Wrangler babe had her arms folded across her chest and looked around nervously. The Betty Boop in the black leather struck a seductive pose as she looked me up and down. Are you the stage manager? She asked. No, I think that guy is. So what are you, a bodyguard? No, I was just passing through town and... So you can't get us backstage? No, not unless I beat somebody up. Betty grew impatient with me and struck another pose, this time for the real stage manager. I'm sure he had seen this routine 1,000 times before, because he smirked, then ignored her. He hung up his radio and started walking away when he looked over his shoulder at me and said, If you want to go to Denver, I'll give you a job. Sounds interesting, I said, but I'm headed north. He disappeared backstage, and I immediately regretted turning down his offer. Any other time and place, I would have gladly jumped at the opportunity, but I was still obsessed with driving Zelda to Alaska. I turned back to Betty, not quite sure what I was going to say now that my status as a celebrity go-between had been severely diminished. But the only thing left of Betty Boop and the Wrangler Babe was the echo of their heels as they swiftly strode away. I sat down in the bleachers to watch the operations when a lady pushing a wheelchair wandered into the maze of equipment. She was having a difficult time negotiating the obstacles, so I offered to lend a hand. Thank you, she said. Are you the stage manager? No, I'm not any kin to George Strait either. What? Nah, never mind. It's just an inside joke. There was a young woman in the wheelchair and a little girl walking beside her. The girl rolled her eyes toward me and beamed a smile. Do you know Tim McGraw? Not exactly. My mommy won a contest, and we get to go backstage and meet him. Wow, that's cool. You know what else, she said? I wrote a song. You did? Well, how about that? We got something in common. Really? Yeah, I've written a few songs myself. As a matter of fact, I've got a demo tape right here in my pocket. I pulled one out and handed it to her. She looked at her mother for permission, and her mother reached for her purse. I refused the offer of money and knelt down in front of the girl. I tell you what, I'll make you a deal. I give you 2 tapes, you give one to Mr. McGraw, and you get to keep the other one. Is that fair enough? We both looked at her mother, who nodded in approval. I handed the tapes to the little girl, and the small entourage disappeared behind the stage. I was walking across the parking lot, chuckling to myself as I thought about Betty Boop and the Wrangler Babe. The world was full of cheap hustlers. But I no sooner had that thought when I remembered the little girl and her friend in the wheelchair. For crying out loud, I'd use that little girl to deliver a demo tape. Talk about a cheap hustler. I passed a karaoke bar as I walked up the hill toward Zelda and went inside on impulse, perhaps to wash away the memory of some ghost living in my own backyard. I felt as though I were imposing on a private party, because everyone in the bar seemed to know each other. I put my name on the karaoke list, then nursed a bud while waiting my turn. A few minutes later, a roaming DJ named Gloria called out my name. I raised my hand and she maneuvered her way over to my table. She was attractive and flirtatious and an expert at working the crowd. Are you Gary? Yes, ma'am. You don't look familiar. You got a last name? I paused a moment and then said, no. Girls, I think we got us a shy one here. She waited for the crowd to respond and got a few catcalls and whistles. Come on, big guy, what's your name? She said while tracing my ear with her fingernail. Then some chick called out from the back of the room, That's it, Gloria, make him talk. Gloria pressed herself into my arm and almost had her tongue in my ear when she said, Hand over your license, cowboy. I fumbled with my wallet, trying to produce a license without scattering my credit cards across the floor. She read the license to herself, then howled into the microphone. Hey, everybody, this is George Strait's cousin. The catcalls and whistles grew much louder. What are you going to sing? How about Amarillo by Morning? I don't recall all the words to that. Did you hear that, ladies? George Strait's own cousin don't even know the words to Amarillo by Morning. How about All My Exes? Well, I don't think I know that one either. What are you going to sing, a Patsy Cline song? Well, actually, I think I do know the words to Crazy. But you don't look much like Patsy Cline, but around here you can sing any damn thing you please. She punched some numbers into a laptop, then yelled into her mic. Here's George Strait's cousin covering a Patsy Cline song. Damned if that don't sound crazy. I stepped onto a platform stage just as the music began. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely. I barely got the line out before a huge cowboy walked up to the stage and said, let me be the first to shake your hand. Excuse me, pal, but I'm trying to sing. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I couldn't believe how big this monster was, because I'm 6'4", and I was standing on a 6-inch platform, and this Frankenstein in a cowboy hat had both feet on the floor, and he was staring me straight in the eye. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted. He had a death grip on my palm as he continued to rattle my bones with his hearty handshake. I believe you sing better than your cousin, he said. Thanks, but he ain't my cousin, and I'm trying to sing. Then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. I tried to pull my hand out of his paw, but he just squeezed tighter. Worry, why do I let myself worry? His breath smelled like a dog fart when he leaned in and said, always wanted to meet a celebrity. Wondering what in the world would I do? His grip was cutting off the circulation of my hand. Oh, crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. My life passed before my eyes as they began to water. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying. I was hypnotized by his eyes because they were eyes of a crazed killer, and crazy for loving you. I never was too sure whether that cowboy actually thought I was a pretty good singer or not. Perhaps he didn't appreciate some stranger crashing their party and pretending to be George Strait's cousin while singing a Patsy Cline song. Then again, he might not have cared too much for the way that pretty little DJ had stuck her tongue in my ear. Any way you look at it, old Buffalo Breath was as big as a bull and probably meaner. If this had been a spaghetti western, I'm sure I could have whooped him good. But there weren't any stuntmen around to take the fall, and I've never been too crazy about the color of my own blood. All things considered, it occurred to me that he might just wanted me to sit down and shut up so his friends could sing. So the next time that pretty little DJ came around, I said, hi, my name is Sue. The next morning, I drove up to Rimrock, which is a sandstone bluff that overlooks Billings. I spent the morning writing a newsletter, but my attention kept wandering to an old Ford pickup that was parked nearby in the scant shade of a Russian olive tree. There was an old couple there who kept themselves busy scurrying around the truck all morning. Zelda was parked in full sunlight, and by midday, the temperature soared to nearly 100 degrees. There was a stiff breeze and no humidity, so the heat was tolerable, except my concentration kept fading until I finally dozed off to sleep at my desk. When I woke up, I had that distinct feeling of being watched. I looked up from a desk, and sure enough, there was a pair of inquisitive eyes peering out from under the brim of a tattered straw hat. They belonged to the old man from the pickup truck. I rubbed sleep from my eyes and stumbled to the rear door. How you doing, neighbor? He said. Great, as soon as I wake up. Take your time, take your time. Ain't good to wake up too fast. Fella needs to wake up slow. Nothing wrong with an afternoon nap, though. Man needs a little nap now and then. That's what the good Lord made afternoons for. I can't argue with that, I said. This is quite a rig you got here. Yes, sir, it's quite a rig. Don't believe I ever seen anything like it. No, sir, I don't believe I have. Thanks, I said, as I stepped down and extended my bruised hand. My name's Gary, and this is Zelda. Darrow's the name. My name is Darrow. You don't sound like you're from around here. No, sir, I live up in British Columbia. I've never heard a Canuck that sounded like an Okie. Well, that might have something to do with the fact that I was born and raised in Arkansas. Yes, sir, I was raised up in Arkansas. But I've lived in Missouri and Texas and Colorado and Oklahoma, all the good places. Yes, sir, I've lived in some pretty fine places. What brings you here? Looking for another fine place to live. Yes, sir, me and the missus are looking for a good place to live. I never lived in Montana, so I thought I'd have a look around. Montana's a mighty good place, but I was going to have a look at Idaho, too. I've heard Idaho's a pretty good place. So what do you do for a living? Well, I do a lot of things. I build things, I fix things, I trade things, but mostly I like to tell stories. I'm a storyteller. Yes, sir, I tell stories. In the good old days, a storyteller was important. He passed along history and tradition, and he reported all the news. But storytellers ain't so important anymore. Not with TVs and VCRs and all. No, sir, not much work for a storyteller these days. Darrow launched into a long and detailed story that I did not fully understand. I got so lost in the storytelling that I didn't comprehend what he was trying to say. I didn't want to hurt the old gentleman's feelings, but I didn't know how to respond. Here's another story. You're sure to like this one. I focused my eyes on a rock and listened carefully. I enjoyed listening to the rise and fall and the rhythm of his voice, but again, I got lost in the performance. He sounded like someone giving overcomplicated road directions. Rather than simply saying, go to the corner, turn right, then go 2 miles to the end of the pavement, my storytelling friend got lost in the excess details. Go down here to the corner and turn right. Now, you could turn left, but that would take you about to Miller's place, and Miller's place ain't the place you want to be. Now, a person can go right on past the corner and go straight back to town, but town ain't where you want to be either. What you want to do is go to the end of the dirt road. Now, that dirt road don't have a name. We just call it the dirt road. Don't ask me why. I guess it's just because nobody ever came along and give it a proper name. Just turn left right there and you can't miss it. The problem was, I did miss it. I missed the point entirely because there were too many details. Darrow finished another story, so I took advantage of the intermission and announced that I had to go into town to mail off my newsletter. I returned to the hilltop just after dark, and my curiosity about Darrow overcame me. So I ventured over to his pickup to listen to him talk some more. Darrow's truck was an old Ford F-150 with a homemade camper built onto the back. The camper was well constructed from used corrugated steel, some old 2x4s, and sheets of plywood that had once been a billboard. The sign had been cut and rearranged, but after studying the pieces and rearranging the puzzle in my mind, I figured out what the sign must have said. Traveler's Paradise Truck Stop and Cafe, Homestyle Cooking, Clean Restrooms, 2 miles south on Highway 59. Darrow proudly introduced me to his lovely Filipino wife. Her name was Zimi. She perched herself on a boulder beside the thorny branches of the Russian olive tree and watched the nightlights of Billings sparkle in the valley below. Darrow strolled back and forth in front of a small campfire and told the story of how he had first met Zimi's sister through a mail-order bride advertisement. I courted Zimi's sister for near about a year via the United States Postal Service. Yes, sir, we dated in a mailbox. But after a year of running out to that mailbox, I decided it was time to run on down to the Philippines. Yes, sir, I just picked up and went on down to the Philippines. Unfortunately, my bride-to-be was a whole lot sweeter on pen and paper than in person. In person, she was rather ill-tempered. Yes, sir, she was downright mean and nasty. On the other hand, my bride-to-be's little sister was quite pleasant. Yes, sir, she was sweet as rhubarb pie. So I just gathered up little sister instead and brought her on back home to live happily ever after. And yes, sir, we've been living happily ever after. Zimi and I applauded as the storyteller stood proudly before his audience. Darrow bowed gracefully to his mail-order bride, whose face was glowing in the light of the fire and beaming with the pride of a princess who is living happily ever after in a fairy tale come true. After the wedding story, Zimi asked Dave to get out his fiddle, so he reached into the back of the camper and produced a homemade violin. It ain't the fanciest around, but I made it myself. Yes, sir, I done it all myself. Like I said, it ain't too fancy, but I guess a fiddle can only play as good as the fiddler. He passed the fiddle over to me for my inspection. Like the homemade camper, the instrument was modest yet functional and been assembled with great care. Dave rosined up the bow and started sawing off bits and pieces of familiar tunes as he rotated the tuning knobs. When satisfied with the sound, he introduced his first song in a manner befitting the Grand Ole Opry. You might recognize this first, little ditty. A fellow by the name of Bob Wells recorded it. Bob Wells and the Texas Playboys. As the familiar melody flowed from the homemade fiddle, Zimi accompanied him in lyrics sung in broken English.
Deep within my heart lied a melody, a song of old Tannenton.
When the fiddle faded to silence, Dave immediately introduced another song. Every time he sawed off a few new bars, Zimi joined in on vocals. And I joined in on harmonies, that is, when I could remember the words.
Here's another one you might know. Bob Wills wrote it, but a young fellow by the name of Ray Price made it a big hit.
As I look at the letters that you wrote to me, is you that I am thinking of. As I read the lines that to me were so sweet, I remember a faded love.
And this next little lumber was done by some boys that called themselves the Sons of the Pioneers.
See, I'm tumbling down, wetting the wolf to the ground, wondering if we'd be found, drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweeds.
No matter the song, if Dave could play it, Zimi knew all the words. We were walking the floor over you, and we all hitched a ride when the devil went down to Georgia. Then we climbed aboard the Orange Blossom Special and rode that glorious old train all the way down to Florida, never once leaving the glow of the campfire underneath the moon and stars of that big Montana sky. Dave put his fiddle away around 10:30, and I wandered back to Zelda. The temperature had been in the high 90s all day, and Zelda had soaked up a lot of heat. The breeze had long since diminished, and even with the windows open and the back door raised, Zelda was like a blast furnace inside. I flopped down on the couch and dozed off to sleep, only to wake up a few minutes later, wringing wet with sweat. I was wide awake, hot as hell, and irritated, so I fired up Zelda and tore off down the road. I raced up Highway 3, but I didn't make it very far before Zelda started coughing and belching. The road was a narrow two-lane with no shoulder and deep ditches on either side. Fortunately, I was able to coast long enough to reach a roadside turnout. I had planned on going back into Billings the next morning to buy some fuel and supplies, but in my haste, I'd forgotten about that plan. And, as I am prone to do, I misjudged how far Zelda would run on diesel fumes. It was after 11 o'clock at night, and there was no traffic. The only car that did come by ignored my extended thumb and raced on by. I could see the neon glow of a bar up ahead, so I set out walking. Broadview is a tiny little town with two bars, a gas station, a post office, a school, and a couple dozen houses. Fortunately, one of the bars was open and I walked in. All the bar stools, with one exception, were occupied by construction workers, farmers, cowboys, and one drunk chick. The only empty stool was next to the drunk chick, so I sat down and ordered a cup of coffee. The drunk chick eyed my coffee suspiciously, then smiled. The cowboy sitting beside her was giving me the evil eye because she was eyeballing me. Evidently, he wasn't in the mood for any last-minute competition, especially this close to closing time. I confessed my sins to Les, the bartender, and within moments everyone was aware of my predicament and started offering suggestions.
Call Bill, he's got a diesel tank in his pickup.
Les tried Bill's number, but there was no answer.
Try Fred, he'll come down, open the gas station.
Les tried Fred's number, and again there was no answer.
Well, try Sammy, I bet he's got some.
Les tried Sammy, still no answer.
Oh, hell, they all went to the fair in Billings. Try the bulk plant over it in Levina.
Let's just forget about it tonight, I said. I can wait till the morning.
Where are you going to sleep? The drunk chick asked.
In my truck.
It might get cold tonight, she said, with a smile.
The cowboy interrupted.
Hell, it's still 80 damn degrees outside.
The drunk chick looked at me as if to say, I've got room at my house. The cowboy's eyes, on the other hand, were saying, get the hell out of Dodge. That's when I asked the bartender if he wouldn't mind calling that bulk plant after all. I finished my coffee and walked back to Zelda, and within the hour, a fuel truck drove up.
Sorry to get you out of bed, I said.
No problem, I was watching Leno anyway.
Besides, I do this all the time. Some days I sell more fuel out of the truck than at the station.
No kidding, I said. Why's that? He looked at me like I was a total idiot and said, it's 200 miles from Billings to Great Falls. You think you're the first trucker to try to make it on 2 gallons? Zelda and I rolled into Broadview after midnight.
I decided to stop and say thanks to the bartender, and I was curious to see if the drunk chick was still hanging on the bar stool. But there were no neon lights, and the door was locked. By now, the hot air in Zelda and the hot air in my head had both chilled out considerably, so I crawled back into bed and went to sleep. I woke up the next morning and felt like someone was watching me. I looked out the window, and there stood a farmer. His hands were folded behind his back, and he was rocking from heel to toe. His eyes started at the front of Zelda, then slowly made their way to the rear, darting from top to bottom. Once he reached the rear, he repeated the examination. I pulled on some clothes and crawled out into the sunlight. "Does Les have the coffee pot on in the morning?" "No, I believe he's going down to Billings this morning." "Darn, I was hoping to say hello. He helped me out last night, and I ran out of fuel just south of town." "Yeah, that seems to happen around here a lot." Then he squinted and tried to read the name on Zelda's door. "What's that say?" "That's my name, Gary. Gary Strait." "Hey, you any kin?" "No, sir." I reluctantly gave the man a 35-cent tour, then told him a little about my trip. He informed me that he ran a custom combine crew from Texas. "Is there any possibility of getting some work around here?" I asked. "About as likely as finding gold in a mine in Texas." "Is everybody finished for the year?" "It's more like the year finished them. The yield was so bad that a lot of farmers around here plowed their wheat under. It's been terrible. We're loading up the combines and headed back to Texas." I pulled back out onto the highway and headed west along the Musselshell River to Harleton, then headed north on Highway 191 through Judith Gap. The irregular peaks and valleys of the mountains, which ordinarily outlined the horizon to the west, were hidden behind a haze of gray smoke from a forest fire, and the golden stalks of grain that usually swayed under the big blue sky stood parched, brown, and motionless. Because of the hot, dry weather, much of the wheat had failed to mature, and what did survive was being devoured by an overabundance of scaly green yellow hoppers. A huge red combine sat abandoned in a field, looking itself like an enormous metallic insect. Someone had made a test loop through the field with the combine and evidently decided the yield was not worth the effort, leaving the wheat for the grasshoppers to harvest. I continued north as swarms of the hoppers migrated across the road, smacking against Zelda's windshield and smashing their yellow innards into grotesque shapes. Whenever the weather got really hot, Zelda's engine became temperamental, overloading with fuel on downhill grades and refusing to shut down when the switch was turned off. Over the course of the summer, I'd asked numerous so-called experts what the problem might be. They all had different opinions, from replacing the fuel solenoid to rebuilding the fuel injection pump, which would have cost at least $750. Obviously, I wasn't too anxious to do that. In years past, I'd purchased two new Kenworths at the dealer in Great Falls and knew the service manager was an expert with old Cummins engines. I stopped in to see if Larry had any ideas, and he immediately suggested that my problem was a plugged fuel return line. At first, I rejected his idea because I had already replaced the fuel lines, but Larry was confident that his diagnosis was correct, so I pulled off the return line, and sure enough, both ends of the new hose were plugged. When the braided hose was made, the compressed fittings had been improperly installed and had dug into the sidewall of the fuel line, creating rubber flappers. When the fuel got hot, the rubber would soften, causing the flapper to collapse, which plugged the fuel return line and forced unburned fuel back into the engine. I replaced the fuel line, and the problem was solved. Every now and then, even the experts know what they're talking about. I pulled out of Great Falls and headed north on I-15 and back out onto the prairie. Now that I was north of the forest fires, the view was unobstructed by smoke. And Mother Nature had been more generous with the rainfall in this region, therefore crops were noticeably more healthy. Honey-colored wheat fields flowed gracefully toward the eastern horizon, merging softly into a powder blue sky. To the west, the fields disappeared in the shadows beneath a jagged row of bluish-gray mountains. Many of the fields had already been combined, but there was still plenty of work to be done. Several combines were sitting idle in a field near the community of Dutton, so I pulled off the highway and parked Zelda at an abandoned gas station. The only thing remaining of the station was the circular driveway and concrete islands where the pumps had once stood. Contrary to the eastern states, where there's an abundance of people, Zelda did not attract a crowd, which I didn't mind. I appreciated the privacy. However, the lack of curious onlookers deprived me of the opportunity to sell tapes and t-shirts, which was my only source of income. Therefore, I needed to find a job.
I unloaded my bicycle and headed over to the cafe, where I sipped a glass of iced tea while eavesdropping on some local conversations. I learned that all of the winter wheat had been harvested, and the combine crews were now waiting for the moisture content to drop on the spring wheat. I also learned that, at least in this part of the country, the consensus was that a Ford diesel could pull the guts out of a Dodge. It was also common knowledge that the waitress had a boyfriend that was a loser. I wondered if he'd driven a Ford lately. One fellow in particular was a big talker and insisted on having the last word on every subject. I finished my iced tea and stopped by their table on my way to the register. "Does anybody know of a harvest crew that needs a hand?" I asked, speaking to no one in particular. The big talker slowly raised his head and stared at me suspiciously. "No." His answer was to the point and invited no other questions. So I directed my next question to another gentleman at the same table and instinctively brushed the side of my head to see if my pointed ears and antennas were showing again. "How soon will they start combining the spring wheat?" No one replied, then the same friendly guy spoke up. "Day or so." Perhaps he didn't care for my pointed ears and antennas, or maybe he didn't like my traveling gator haircut. He might have been suspicious of my cut-off Wranglers and In-N-Out t-shirt, or else he just didn't care for strangers poking around and asking questions. I certainly hoped he wasn't a member of the Welcome Wagon Committee. I set out to explore the outskirts of town on my bicycle and came across some fellows working on combines. They had several cab-over freightliners, which were similar to the first trucks I owned. "Those are pretty nice little trucks," I said, realizing that comment had little value coming from a stranger wearing cut-off shorts, a t-shirt, and riding a bicycle. "Yeah, they do the job," said a tall, skinny fellow. "That's about a 1982, ain't it?" "Close," he said. "It's an 83. I also recognized the distinct sound of the engine, which was percolating at an idle. "Sounds like a big cam 350. "Yeah, that's right. I used to have a couple of freightliners like these," I said. "Mine were older, but they haven't changed much." "I can hardly tell the difference myself. Sounds like you've been around trucks." "Yes, sir, most of my life." "Ever seen anything like that?" I looked across the field at a distance and realized he was pointing at Zelda. "You talking about that old Pete?" "Yeah, ain't that the dangest thing you ever seen?" "Yeah, it's pretty wild," I said. "I built it myself." "That's yours?" "Yes, sir." "Well, I'll be danged." He wiped his hands on his coveralls and offered it for a shake. "My name's Grover. I'm up here from Kansas. This is my combine crew." We fell into an easy conversation about trucks and combines, wheat and weather, work and waitresses. Grover said the spring wheat ought to be ready in a day or two, but he had a full crew and didn't need any more help, although he assured me I'd be welcome if he did. Then he suggested I talk to another crew on the other side of town. I rode to a vacant lot that was being used as a makeshift trailer court for the harvest crews and pedaled through the maze of travel trailers until I found the one that matched Grover's description. It was a brand new fifth wheel with Texas plates and an air conditioner humming loudly on the roof. A floor mat lying on the ground in front of the door said, "Welcome to our home away from home." I knocked and a girl in her 20s answered. She is wearing a pair of cut-off Wranglers, a t-shirt, new tennis shoes, and she is about 3/4 cute. The proverbial farmer's daughter. "What you need?" she asked. "I'm looking for work. Is your father around?" "He's out taking moisture samples." Her eyes darted about nervously, and I stepped back from the door so that I wouldn't intimidate her. But I was still close enough to feel the coolness from the air conditioner wash over me, and I could see Jerry Springer behind her on the TV. If this had been a B-grade movie I was living in, she would have invited me in for a glass of iced tea. But unfortunately, this was reality, so I stepped further back from the door to ease the tension. "Do you know if your dad needs any help?" "He might. My little brother has to go back to Texas to go to school tomorrow." I was still holding out for that offer of iced tea. "Would you tell him I stopped by? I'm parked out by the highway in an old Peterbilt."
"That big black thing?"
"Yeah, the big black thing," I grinned, trying to coax a smile out of her.
"We saw that," she said as she slammed the door.
"Thanks for the iced tea," I said, speaking only to the welcome mat. By mid-afternoon, I couldn't stand the heat in Zelda any longer, and my spirits were pretty low. I would have gone for a motorcycle ride, but I wanted to make sure the foreman from the combine crew could find me, so I decided to go to town to the community pool instead. The pool was swarming with kids, which I didn't mind, and they didn't even seem to notice me.
But a strange man traveling alone creates suspicion, so I kept my distance and spoke only to the lifeguard. The cool, clear water chilled me out in no time, and my attitude began to improve. I left the pool refreshed and laid down under a shade tree to nap, but the ground was hard, the grass made me itch, and the grasshoppers were soon swarming over me like the little people in Gulliver's Travels. I went back to the cafe and ordered an iced tea and drank very slowly. I drank so slowly that I dozed off to sleep until dinner time. That's when a couple of old ladies rousted me out of the booth so they could sit down. The sun was starting to fade, so I went back to Zelda, opened all the windows, turned on the fan, and sat there on the couch until I began to simmer like a pot roast, boiling in my own sweat. Finally, I said to hell with meeting the combine foreman, so I climbed on the Harley and set off down the highway. It was a perfect evening for a ride, except for the splattering grasshoppers. But I rode around till midnight, then came back to Zelda. It was still unbearably hot inside, so I sat on the back porch, sipped a bud, and stared at the stars until I dozed off. When I woke up, I found myself back in bed, with sweat pouring out of me like a wrung-out sponge. I lay there gasping for air until I heard voices. A big red pickup was parked outside, and Zelda seemed to be the subject of their conversation. I was sick of talking to people about Zelda, so I made no effort to entertain them, until I noticed the farmer's daughter sitting in the truck. I crawled out of bed and into Zelda's front seat, lazily draping my arm out the window, exactly as the farmer in the pickup was doing. Then I realized that the farmer driving the pickup was none other than the big talker that I had encountered at the restaurant. "Hi there, can I help you?" "I believe you talked to my daughter yesterday," he said. I wasn't sure if this was an accusation or merely an observation. "Yes, sir," I said. He sat quietly, staring at Zelda for several minutes, then leaned out the window and fixed his eyes on Zelda's hood. "Can you drive a truck?" I looked at Zelda's long black hood, then instinctively rocked her twin shift levers from side to side. What a stupid question, I thought. "Well, yes, sir, I believe I can drive a truck." Now the big talker didn't seem to have much to say. The drama was killing me. "You got a CDL?" "Yes, sir." At least the conversation was picking up speed. "Ever loaded out of the field before?" "Yes, sir. I've hauled corn, wheat, sugar beets, and barley." "You going to be around a couple days?" "Yes, sir, if I can find work." "I could use a hand starting tomorrow." "I'll be here." After breakfast, I set my fan on the desktop next to the computer and worked on a newsletter until I was afraid the sweat dripping from my fingers might short out the keyboard. Now that I had a job lined up, I decided to climb on the Harley and head toward the mountains. I rode west to a town called Shoto and got on Highway 89 headed north. Hot wind charged down the foothills and blasted across the highway, tossing me and the scooter around like a tumbleweed. I puttered along about 45 miles per hour so I could check out the scenery and so the grasshoppers didn't splatter quite so hard. By the time I got to Browning, my sunbaked arms were coated in yellow goo. Then I rode toward Glacier National Park and found a general store in an old west town. I bought a pop and a candy bar, then stretched out in the grass to scrape the goo off my boots, jeans, and knuckles. It was considerably cooler in the mountains, and it felt good to just lay there and do absolutely nothing. But it was getting late in the day, and if I wanted to ride through the park, I had to get moving. I pulled on my leather jacket and headed out. The temperature dropped steadily as I rode higher into the mountains until I reached West Glacier. It was downright cold there, mostly because the sun was beginning to slip from the sky. I looked in my saddlebags for a pair of gloves and a heavy shirt. Damn it, I'd left them in Zelda. I considered buying a pair of gloves that I couldn't afford, but that idea stunk, especially since there were two good pairs back in the truck. I checked the map and the distance hadn't shrunk any, so I had at least 3 or 4 hours to ride back to Zelda. By the time I got out of the mountains, it was pitch dark, and my whole body trembled from cold, and I could hardly unwrap my fingers from the handlebars. But the air down on the prairie was warm, and the heat from the pavement helped ease the chill in my spine. I arrived back at Zelda around midnight, and she was still hot inside. However, now the heat felt good. I crashed on the couch and never batted an eye. The next morning, I rode my bike over to the combine camp, and no one was around. I rode over to the cafe, but the big red truck wasn't there, and neither was the big talker. So I went back to Zelda and worked on my newsletter. 10 o'clock rolled around, and there was still no sign of the big talker. Then 11 o'clock passed. By noon, I felt like a marshmallow dangling over a campfire, so I headed over to the cafe to cool off. That's where I overheard a comment about the harvest crew that went to the field shorthanded because the son had to go back to Texas. Evidently, the big talker needed a real truck driver. Or maybe he wanted one that wouldn't talk to his daughter. Or maybe he just didn't like my pointed ears and antennas. For whatever the reason, I decided I'd wasted too much time in beautiful downtown Dutton, Montana. So I loaded up and headed north.
Please fast forward to side B.